Moore's Law and beyond. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of this here electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. Flight controls check. Fuel quantity check. Taxi area clear. IP verified. Check. I hope you have your seatbelt low and tight across your waist, my friends, because we are flying high into cloud-based design with sci-fi CEO Naveed Sherwani and founder and CTO Yunsup Lee. With templates, code, fabs, and processes in our cloud cargo hold, we're headed straight into the next generation of silicon design. Let's go. Hi, guys. Thank you so much for joining me.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Okay, so first off, tell my audience what Sci-5 is all about.
Well, Sci-5 is about revolutionizing how silicon is experienced, in the sense that how silicon is designed, how silicon is developed, how silicon is deployed. It has been very much a situation where each company does their own data center, they have their own tools, they have their teams. And in the last 50 years or so, we have seen that system not scale. And what we propose and what we have developed is a cloud-based technology that allows folks anywhere in the world with a laptop to be able to experience the entire design from IP to design itself, and the verification, and then sending the design to a fab, and then package it and test it all on the cloud. This is a dramatic departure from what has happened in the last 50 years. A very big role is of RISC-V in this, and the way the RISC-V cores were designed originally and how they are designed today, and the core generator system of designing the cores, and then same thing applies to the chips itself. So I think if you look at what we are developing and what we are building, and it's already in beta release with our customers, is this incredible piece of software that has been deployed on the cloud, which completely changes how people think about designing silicon. And the very big part of that is, since it is on the cloud, it is no longer limited to Silicon Valley or a few cities in India, a few cities in China. We expect anybody in the world who has an interesting idea will have access to all the relevant IPs, relevant templates, relevant cores, tools, processes, fabs, so that they can experience silicon just like we have been fortunate in these few locations in the world.
So you guys have a series of IP cores, E5, E3, and E2. So let's talk about each of these. But let's start at E2. What kind of applications is this IP good for, and what does it buy me as an engineer?
So the cores consist of, you know, the E starts from for the embedded cores, and generally speaking, as you go up the numbers, it increases in terms of performance. You go down, it's lower power in areas. As you said, let's start with the E2 series. E2 series is the 32-bit low power core IP. It's Sci-5's smallest, lowest power 32-bit core series. The E2 series are really meant for lowest power in area. The target applications are market controllers, IoT, and wearables.
Okay, so let's dig into the E3 core. Now, this is a RISC-V core, correct? So how is this IP core different from the E2 core?
E3 series, for folks who need a bit more performance than the E2 series, the E3 series is the 32-bit high-performance core IP. It also has cache configurations and things like that. So E3 series are better suited for higher performance embedded systems, including modems and smart IoT sensors. And E3 series are still 32-bit.
Okay, so that brings us to the E5 core. Now, you guys say that this core offers 64-bit performance at a 32-bit price and area. So how does that work?
Yeah, so the E5 series kind of fills in a empty spot in the system today, where it's a 64-bit embedded core IP. So for applications which need more than 32-bit address space, you know, for example, for networking, storage, and industrial applications, where you actually need to attach more than 4 gigabytes of DRAM, it's really useful in those cases for the E5 series because, you know, the address bits are 64 bits and the integer ALU is also 64 bits. So if you need more performance doing integer arithmetic things, the E5 series is really a great fit for engineers.
Okay, cool. So to wrap things up, let's talk about RISC-V. Now, you guys are one of the creators of the RISC-V architecture. So tell me about the development of the RISC-V architecture and where you think it's headed in the future.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. I started the RISC-V project in 2010 when I was a graduate student at Berkeley. I really wanted to learn how to build processors myself, so I personally started the RISC-V project alongside my co-founder and friend, Andrew Waterman, and our then advisors, Professor Chris Hasanovich and Professor Dave Patterson. We started a 3-month project to define an ISA, and only 4 years later, we kind of froze the user level ISA of the RISC-V. We weren't just at Berkeley working on stuff. We were actually building processors, trying out our own designs, building actual silicon and stuff. And we started Sci-5 in 2015 after, you know, we were about to graduate. We put the RISC-V stuff on the website in 2014, actually not really knowing who would be interested in it. And to our surprises back then, you know, we started getting emails about, hey, this is really cool, things like that. So we started Sci-5 to provide commercial support around the RISC-V instruction set architecture so that people can start building their applications with RISC-V very easily. We started the RISC-V Foundation in 2015 as well in August. And now we're more than 100 companies. There's actually going to be a big RISC-V summit this December in Santa Clara Convention Center. This time, we don't have any quota in terms of how many people we can accept at the summit. So if you're, you know, interested in learning about what RISC-V is, please join the summit. But, you know, I think the general direction in where RISC-V is going is really enabling a lot of people traditionally who were not able to participate in the custom silicon kind of era, giving them access to technology and cool things so that they can actually start innovating. So RISC-V is really about innovating.
Excellent. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have you ever thought about what construction will be like on the moon? I mean, how exactly are we going to build up there? We've all seen The Martian, right? We really don't want to bust open a hole in our moon lander tent. And sending materials to space isn't exactly cost-effective. The going rate to send a single bottle of water to space is around $20,000. So yeah, that's out of the picture for now. But what if we make our moon outposts out of the moon itself? Yeah, didn't think about that, did you, Matt Damon? Well, this is exactly what the European Astronaut Center is exploring. Here on Earth, that is. What if we could build lunar outposts out of moon dust? But that also begs the question immediately, where the heck are we going to find enough moon dust to test out this plan? Well, funny thing. Since the moon and the Earth share a very similar geological history, there is actually an area around Cologne, Germany, that contains a very particular volcanic powder. And with the right kind of stimulation, that powder can mimic lunar dust. This new enhanced volcanic powder, which was originally created from lava flows from about 45 million years ago, has been named EAC-1. But this team at the European Astronaut Center quickly found out that EAC-1 wasn't quite the same as the real deal. The grain of real lunar dust is crazy sharp, so much so that it's actually a health hazard because of the ongoing bombardment of radiation on the moon. So just grind it way down, right? No, not quite. This team found that when they subjected EAC1 to radiation, it activated the particles to make it the right consistency, but completely destroyed other properties. So far, this team at the European Astronaut Center is still working to create the perfect lunar dust replication. But I definitely think they're on the right track. And maybe someday, lunar dust will be able to help us create roads, launch pads, and even habitats on the moon. So if you want to see a video of this replica lunar dust in action or read more about the project, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. If we can future-proof our next moon communities, can we future-proof our next design here on Earth? Well, I know neither seem like real strong possibilities, but maybe. Yes, I know future-proofing your embedded design can be a daunting challenge. With the wide variety of microcontrollers available today, it can be really tricky to choose the one that will meet the full life cycle demands of your next product. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled The 32-Bit Difference, How to Future-Proof Your Next Design, I sit down with Brendan Slade from NXP and chat all about how you can future-proof your next design with the right MCU. And you can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, by heading on over to the Chalk Talk section of EE Journal. Can't miss it. It's right across the top. Or head on over to YouTube. Keyword EE Journal. And hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com. I promise I will respond or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of September 21st, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.